Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Good morning and welcome to another edition of Better Living, a show about people or organizations having a big impact here in North Texas. I'm your host, Chris Arnold of 105.3 The Fan. We're going to start today's show with our Odyssey Conversation Series, Artificial Intelligence.
Artificial intelligence has been one of the most common phrases in our society of late. But is it a tool to make our lives better or something to be feared? I'm Matt Bigler with Odyssey News Station KCBS in San Francisco, where my colleagues and I will be taking you on a journey across Silicon Valley to explore this artificial revolution and consider, is the future automation? Ben Beharin is a Silicon Valley-based tech analyst. Ben, this term AI is bounced around quite a bit, but is what we're seeing out there really artificial intelligence?
Oh, sure. No, it's a great place to start. And, you know, it kind of feels like one of those philosophical discussions, right, to start. Because you're right, there's a lot of ways to look at this. I think people who have been in this field for a long time look at some of the generative AI stuff that we have today, which is really just, I would say, some form of advanced, to use a technical term, matrix multiplication, which just means that if you put in a word, it's essentially going to try to predict the next word or just string together logic of sentence structure and a whole host of other things, right? And that's just simple like math that's happening on our compute engines. Nobody would call that intelligence, right? Being able to say, write me an essay on so-and-so and so, you know, topic, and it just goes to the internet and forms something that looks readable. You know, again, it's automating a process. It's not really what we would sort of call intelligent. So I think there's a gap today as to what this idea is of where we'll go, where something might be truly intelligent, you know, maybe even able to do or come up with ideas, concepts, creative ideas that humans can't, or on the level with humans. That is not where we're at today. But I think the way I would look at least today is that it's more of an augmentation type of intelligence. So you're able to have it help you do things, help you, you know, write an email for you, right, in your tone. Again, not intelligent, that's a useful feature, but that's essentially augmenting a function of a task that a human does with a computer. And that's, there. We can go down this path of, well, is that the ultimate reality here, that it's more just an augmented type of intelligence designed to make humans more efficient? Or are we going down this path where something's going to be independently sentient, where you hear people talk about this idea of, you know, artificial general intelligence? So I don't know. I know a lot of people are chasing this, you know, sentient. I think that's a long, 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 long way off. But the idea that this is now just augmenting us in helpful, quasi-useful ways, right? That's the world that we're at today with this, you know, quote-unquote term, artificial intelligence.
Standing on a San Francisco street, you might not notice that some cars passing you have no drivers. Mike DeWald with Odyssey News Station KCBS rode along with one Californian who decided to give the self-driving rideshare company Waymo a try.
The prospect of hopping into a moving car with no driver for some can be scary, for others intriguing.
When I first moved here, just seeing these cars with the giant cameras spinning and no one in the driver's seat.
Logan Pratt moved to San Francisco 3 years ago.
I've definitely been wanting to try it. I just haven't really found the right time or made the effort to.
We joined Logan on his first Waymo ride in San Francisco. We called up the app, which told us there would be a 6-minute wait. On the way, running into a protest.
We know what you do.
More on that in a moment. Right on time, we found our vehicle parked and waiting.
Here we go. Wow. Handle comes out for us. That's just fantastic.
The car giving a welcoming greeting with relaxing music.
Sounds like I'm in a spa.
Surprisingly, the car also acknowledging what we encountered on the walk here.
Our team is aware of the interruption to your ride.
And with that, we were off. The most obviously notable feature, no driver.
This is so odd. There's just no one in the front seat.
The car maneuvering an average day of city traffic without issue.
It's cool how the wheel is just like making like all these micro adjustments. So far, steady ride.
A digital panel on the center console shows a detailed map of everything around.
That has a whole view of every car, even their blinkers.
We may use interior cameras to check on riders, improve our products, and more. But our microphones are only on when you're connected to rider support.
This Waymo passes the test of a five-way intersection.
That was actually kind of a complicated intersection.
That was a very complicated intersection. I would be a little stressed myself driving across that one.
The alternative, ride-hail services with a driver, have their positives and negatives.
You know, sometimes you get a weird driver, their car smells bad. Sometimes you're like, when did this person learn how to drive yesterday?
But then there's the benefits of local knowledge of the neighborhoods.
In cases of emergency, like, you kind of do need a human.
Then about halfway through, it happened. A moment of seeming confusion as the car pulled up behind a large truck offloading.
Uh-oh. Now we're getting beeped at. All right, let's see if it goes now. Oh. There you go. I thought we were going to be stuck there.
Took a couple minutes, but crisis ultimately averted.
I don't think I've ever done that.
That made a choice right there, because we had to go into oncoming traffic.
Yeah, that was just right over the double yellow.
With that, we reached our destination.
Look at that. It pulls over off onto a side road.
You're here. Please make sure it's clear before exiting.
A successful, roughly 40-minute ride equating to an $18 fare.
Ride one complete. What's the assessment?
It was great. I thought I would be scared, but I wasn't.
Pratt admits, despite a smooth ride, there are some elements that are tough to get used to.
Seeing no human in the driver's seat was very weird.
Is that the hardest thing to overcome?
Yeah, it's just weird. Like, I've never been in a car without someone in the driver's seat while it's driving, so it's just like, who's driving me right now?
Still, Pratt says he's up for using the Waymo service more regularly.
Whoever coded it to drive us, I guess they're doing a good job, so props to you guys in Waymo.
Waymo's autonomous vehicles aren't alone on the streets of San Francisco. Zoox's ramping up testing of its more shuttle-like robo-taxis here and on the Las Vegas Strip. A first chance for the public to ride will come next year, but only in Sin City.
This innovation has also expanded to another business experience that we all have, shopping. Not just for efficiency, but also for the fun of it. Holly Kwan with Odyssey News Station KCBS went to check out the latest innovations seen in stores.
If you thought online shopping was easy, now comes the next step in brick and mortar commerce.
With Amazon One, you can enter, identify, and pay with just your palm, whether it's getting to the gym,
USC Professor Emeritus Gerard Medioni is an Amazon VP and distinguished scientist who helped design the palm reading technology. On a video posted by Amazon Science, he says it's about solving the problem of the time suck.
Go look for your credit card, or you need to fish for your phone, and you know it creates friction. What we want to do here is give customers time back.
You link your credit card to a scan of your palm and you're done.
First thing is that you're in control. Each time you use Amazon One, you intentionally need to put your hand over the device to scan your palm for it to work. So you get to decide exactly when and where to be recognized.
In the last year, these palm readers have been in place in more than 500 Whole Foods stores, which enjoys a loyal customer base. But these Oakland shoppers aren't ready to hand over their hands.
I've seen it for the past year, and I haven't been able to move myself towards using it. I do use the Retina for the iPhone, right? And we do use the fingerprint for the iPhone and other things, but for some reason, I just haven't been able to entrust that with Amazon.
I tried the Amazon stores where you can kind of go in, personless shopping, and
just walk out.
It was fine, not great. If I had a question, I'm kind of, you know, stuck searching on my phone for, and I look forward to seeing people in the grocery store, not just, you know, people who are also shopping, but people who work at the grocery store and, you know, be able to kind of say hi.
If we're going to introduce these technologies, they have to work really, really well.
CBS tech analyst Ian Schur.
Amazon's thing, it's an interesting idea, but I think part of why it hasn't caught on broadly, and by that I mean outside of Amazon, is that kind of discomfort with a new technology. You know, I've been using Apple Pay and Google Pay since they came out, essentially. And still to this day, when I use my watch instead of my phone, people give me a look, but they're totally used to it with the phone.
Cashless payment, driverless cars, it's a level of autonomy we still have to get used to.
A great example I was taught many years ago was that, you know, one of the reasons that elevator companies had people standing in the elevators initially, pushing the buttons and operating the elevators was not because they needed someone to be there to push the buttons. We all know how to push buttons, but it was to make people feel more comfortable with the idea that someone was in charge of the elevator, right? And that it was safe. And I think that the way we look at these things changes over time, but we have to be proven those trusts.
Who likes being comfy here?
Coors Field, just the latest MLB park to install Pay by Palm technology. But then where's the fun in being tossed a cold one from the vendor? Back at Whole Foods.
Apple Pay on my phone is just as fast. But then now you're having Apple have access to all your credit cards and stuff. So it's like, what do you want to give up, you know? What level of freedom do you want to have computers take over for you?
I choose to come to the grocery store. We have Amazon for free this month, for Whole Foods delivery for free. And I just want to, I don't know, there's something about being here, being around people.
Touching the fruit.
Touching the fruit, seeing the things that we like, smelling it. I don't know. I just don't want to go to this point in my life where everything is done via phone and via digital.
Everybody's using AI for what? To make art, to make music, to do all this stuff, to take away from people's work and stuff. It's like, that's all things that humans should do. So why is it that we're having a computer take away that elements that create the creativity of people?
At a certain point, we have to ask, what society are we building? Are we chipping away at the foundations of civil society by lessening our interaction with each other, reducing the amount of time and meaningfulness of our connections?
With art often comes science, or at least it feels that way on the job hunt, whether you are looking or if you're the one hiring. Shannon Golden with Odyssey News Station KCBS went along for the journey.
Searching for a new job can turn into a full-time gig. I've been there, and it's top of mind for Keaton Maring, a third-year law student at University of San Francisco's School of Law.
It is a lot, and it is kind of difficult to find jobs that are open or, you know, that I'm going to be qualified to get.
Third-year Brandon's been scouring for internship opportunities.
Honestly, I'm spreading myself very thin across everything, just hoping something bites.
But they both have a trick up their sleeve to try and get a leg up on the competition. ChatGPT, a generative artificial intelligence chatbot that, when given instructions, can provide a detailed response.
I mostly use it for resume and like cover letters.
Brandon uses it to prepare for interviews.
I put what I would say in and see like if it can help make it a little bit more professional instead of just me spewing about my life.
And they're not alone. According to a ResumeBuilder.com survey, almost two-thirds of job seekers these days are getting hired after using resumes and cover letters written by ChatGPT.
We are strongly encouraging students to use AI.
Alex Hockman, director at USF's Career Center, is now coaching students on how to use AI.
I always say, remind it what year you are, what school you go to, what your major is, because AI knows a lot more about USF sometimes, it seems like, than I do.
But he says because models like ChatGPT aren't customized for the job hunt, they're not flawless tools.
But it's pretty obvious sometimes when I'm like, hey, just out of curiosity, like, did you use AI for that cover letter? Like, nothing against that at all, but it looks a little stiff. Like, it looks a little off.
Which is why AI developers are trying to improve the process.
We've built a system that acts as a fail-safe around the typical challenges or typical failure points of a general AI system.
That's Puneet Kohli, CEO and founder of CareerFlow AI, a Silicon Valley startup that built its own AI model customized for a more efficient job search.
We estimate that we save our users at least 10 hours a week.
And AI has saved time for job recruiters, too. The global staffing firm Robert Half has used its proprietary AI model to analyze over 30 million candidate profiles.
AI plays a significant role
I would say in streamlining tasks like resume screening, candidate matching, and assessing engagement.
Senior Regional Director Jason King says, yes, recruiters can usually tell if AI's been used. And new research shows that job seekers with AI-boosted resumes are 8% more likely to be hired. But according to King, even a strong AI resume can't tell the full story.
Soft skills like communication, adaptability, really aren't easily captured by AI, which is why our recruiters continue to conduct personalized assessments.
Coley expects we'll continue to see this shift towards incorporating AI in the job hunt.
The resume, in the way we think about it today, is going to become a relic of the past.
And Hockman is hopeful AI might be able to help level the playing field for his students and others.
I do think AI will probably be more fair. I hope I don't come to regret those words.
This Odyssey Conversation, Artificial Revolution, is a production of KCBS All News Radio in San Francisco, produced by Michelle Fredrigal and Dennis Foley. Be sure to download the free Odyssey app for more shows like this, your favorite radio stations, and so much more. For Odyssey and KCBS, I'm Matt Bigler. Artificial intelligence has been one of the most common phrases in our society of late. But is it a tool to make our lives better? Or something to be feared? I'm Matt Bigler with Odyssey News Station KCBS in San Francisco, where my colleagues and I will be taking you on a journey across Silicon Valley to explore this artificial revolution and consider, is the future automation? Creative arts has been a major topic in the AI era. So David Welch with Odyssey News Station KCBS sat down with an expert to make music with AI.
The best way to describe how AI can generate music, making music using AI. That might seem like a daunting task. After all, the world of artificial intelligence is filled with cryptic names and code-like descriptions. But fortunately for me, Professor Ben Kemp with the Berklee School of Music has a lot of practice. And as his job title tells you, he's good at explaining.
You go over here, there's a button that says create. You click create.
Kemp and I are on a website called Suno.com. It advertises we can make songs about anything.
So what kind of music are you into?
I just listened to some recordings by Count Basie. The professor and I come up with prompts, a big band song about a late night party.
And what happens at the late night party?
It is a song, so someone's falling in love.
Our old friends rekindle a love. Okay, so that's all that we had. That's all the work that we had to do.
15 seconds later, the song is born.
Moonlight grace the midnight sky.
Clearly, I'm not winning a Grammy. And Kemp shows me that some of my prompts needed refining. After another pass, it started to get closer.
The moon was high. The stars align.
Now, I'm curious, as a songwriter and a musician and a composer, how do you feel about this?
I feel all sorts of ways about this.
AI among art is a polarizing topic. Across mediums, artists are split. On the one hand, there's the origin of creativity. In our case, it's a song. But is it a song if it's a mashup of previous ideas? Then there's the question of when creative license ends. Kemp says he and his classes wrestle with these ideas every day. But he says he always reminds his students that music is constantly innovating.
Technology has played a pretty huge role in music and music creation. I mean, one of the kind of analogs for me is in the 80s, the sampler became widely available.
Kemp is quick to point out that sampling and machine learning do have their differences. But he says it demonstrates the fundamental point. Human interaction is key to creation. He uses a different AI songwriting model to show me.
I went into my digital audio workstation. That's the program that I make music in. And I booted up two of the quickest sounds that I could find. I just grabbed the first two sounds that I had and played something very, very simple and rushed. Barely listenable. Not something I would put on streaming services, but there are notes and rhythms in it.
Kemp doesn't help the composition when he adds a voice that's more of a mumble than a melody, so but when the machine gets a hold of all of it, it spits out this.
I ain't like what I hear. I don't want to hear you anymore. My ears are getting tired.
You sound like my ex.
What we have is far from where we started, with Kemp's vocal track making the biggest transition. The machine did all of this, and it was astonishingly fast. But Kemp reminds me that we started with a tune that was and is still pretty bad.
It's a really great and really quick sketchpad. For me to get the last thing that I just played you, the Yacht Rock version with the beautiful vocals on it. If I was with humans, that would be like 2 to 4 hours of work.
The case for AI and art is often rooted in workflow. The machine saves precious time by taking away the tedium, something Kemp thinks benefits musicians. But he worries regulations will stand in the way.
I hope that the AI industry and the music industry, they come together to find a way to allow this technology to be used ethically and responsibly moving forward, rather than cut off and stopped.
But as someone that makes his living teaching others how to create, he's just as concerned about artists getting paid for their work.
If I don't want the model training on my songs, I should be able to choose, I don't want the model training on my songs. If the model does train on my songs, and it generates music based on what it learned from me, then I should be entitled to some kind of compensation for that.
But most important, he doesn't think anyone will listen, AI or not, unless the music is good, something he believes only comes with human intervention.
We're continuing the conversation with David Welch and tech analyst Ben Beharin. Tools in the AI space have created a lot of disruption where people are able to seemingly make their own solutions very fast.
Very, very fast. And just, you know, continue moving. Let, you know, you look at this moment that was ChatGPT of a couple years ago, and we're in such a different place now, and we'll be in such a different place in another year. So it's incredible the amount of innovation that's happening. Honestly, it's exciting. I know it freaks a lot of people out, but you know, this is one of those very big and disruptive moments, like I said, that we'll look back on in 10 years and see profound impacts from.
Yeah, it's. I think you touched on the word is disruptive, and that's not a bad thing. I remember the Atari 2600 wasn't disruptive, but the fact that I could do it at my house was disruptive.
Yes, right.
And the disruptive, depending, there's any innovation involves this element of disrupting things, of just fundamentally changing the way we look at reality. And it's an amazing thing. I went into this story feeling scared of AI. I walk away from this story feeling excited about it.
It's also changing how the healthcare industry operates, using AI not only on the administrative side, but also with your doctor's decision-making. Brett Burkhardt with Odyssey News Station KCBS says medical science is taking a page from science fiction.
Life is imitating art at Stanford Healthcare. Star Trek predicted it decades ago with a medical scanner for their science fiction doctors.
Star Trek, part of the feature was the technology. We're really excited when the technology blends in the background.
Congestion in both lungs.
An important aspect of artificial intelligence in the medical field.
When I learned, we started with a pencil and paper.
Dr. Christopher Sharp is the Chief Medical Information Officer for Digital Solutions at Stanford Healthcare.
Basically trying to make sure that healthcare technology works for our clinicians in the care of their patients.
He remembers a time when the best doctors were known for a key skill.
How much can you memorize? That's what you need to know. That's the most important thing, is which doctor is the smartest, is the doctor that remembers the most of the textbook.
But that carried a big burden.
Because that was all written in paper, it was never seen again. It was just locked up. And it was impossible to really learn from that.
And now?
The textbook is infinite. It's absolutely impossible to understand and absorb all this knowledge. So AI provides an opportunity to be able to surface that knowledge where it makes sense, you know, for doctors.
Dr. Sharp says AI removes a barrier in the patient's hospital room in a way in which you may be able to relate.
If your doctor's turned with their back to you while they're typing in the computer to make sure that they got all the information, you're not going to be happy as a patient. That interaction is not very rich. It doesn't engender trust and really deep understanding.
But AI is allowing doctors to remove that keyboard that has been a barrier to your care.
The doctor now can be looking the patient right in the eye as they're talking about very complex care, knowing that behind them, there's this tool capturing all the important parts and bringing those back into the data set later that is important.
Therein lies the difference between art being front and center in shows like Star Trek and life in this new world of AI in the background.
Because it shows that actually technology can make the human interaction more possible instead of technology that gets in between the human interaction.
Lie on your back.
The promise of better care using AI is not limited to the interactions between you and your doctor.
We'll start with some range of motion.
It's quickly showing promise in patient imaging.
a radiologist could see certain things on the x-ray highly reliably, but artificial intelligence might have its own way of looking at the x-ray. When you bring the two together, it helps to decrease that miss rate.
And Dr. Sharp is hopeful it will soon help diagnose and treat patients who have symptoms you can't find through a simple blood test.
Could this help us to identify patients who have depression, but they're not telling you?
And while hospital systems like Stanford Healthcare are carefully moving forward with AI technology as just one tool in the toolbox, they are equally exploring guardrails to keep patients safe.
I'm not going to take your data and put it into ChatGPT because I don't know who's going to look at that, right? And if I name you and put down your diagnoses and say, hey, ChatGPT, what do you think? I'm completely exposing your data in a way that is absolutely not okay.
It's the reason why Stanford Healthcare is using its renowned group of health technology experts to build the next generation of care through AI to sidestep the human condition.
All of us tire. All of us miss things from time to time as humans. Being able to bring that extra support into that complex diagnostic decision-making by a machine that never gets tired, never calls in sick, you know, and is always there to kind of back you up, that's something that we think is going to be incredibly powerful.
So while Hollywood may be able to predict outlines of the future, Dr. Sharp will only venture to guess one thing.
I think that none of us know where it's going to be in 10 years, but we know for sure it will be in probably everything we do.
The big fear almost everyone has with AI is that it's coming for our jobs. So, I have one final test.
I have written three scripts based on an event in the news this last week. Two of them were written by AI. One of them, yours truly. So, I'm going to play all three and see if our AI experts can identify which is artificial intelligence and which was written by human intelligence.
This store has been targeted by burglars four times in recent months. The thieves are using cars to smash through the doors or even attaching chains to rip them open. The owner has had enough. He's bought a van and parks it right in front of his store every night like a makeshift barricade.
Okay, that's number one. This is number two.
The burglars
are getting bolder. They're using cars like battering rams or using chains to yank the doors right off the hinges. Fearing for his livelihood, the owner has come up with a unique security measure. He's bought a van and parks it in front of his store every night, blocking the entrance.
And number three.
Like many businesses along High Street, High Gift, and Mini Market has been repeatedly broken into by criminals who often use vehicles to smash through front entrances. Now, owners are trying to make things harder for the bad guys. They've installed curbside barriers, and overnight they're parking a large van in front of the business.
What do you think? Was it one, two, three? I should say two of them were AI, one of them was me.
Hi, my name is Georgetta, and I'm an assistant professor of computer engineering at San Jose State. Not easy to say. Usually people employ automated analysis tools to detect the mathematical properties of the text. I felt the two sounded most human and most like you.
Okay, and why?
It was a little bit more colorful.
My name is Neha, and I'm an undergraduate student at San Jose State, and I also work as research assistant on AI for Social Good projects.
Which did you think were the AI scripts, and which were the human script?
I would also say that the second one sounded more human, but I could be wrong because AI can be manipulated, and with prompt you can make it sound like that it's really human.
So are you ready for the big reveal? I wrote number three.
Wow.
Yeah. And to be honest with you, it was the worst of the three. The other two I thought were better than mine.
The third one sounded very editorial. So I, most of the time when you ask AI questions, it's mostly editorial. You have to tell to stop that editorial thing and give me the answer. Uh-huh. The third one was very editorial, very AI-like.
So actually, I was on the fence between two and three.
Okay.
I felt that the three had more elements kind of the physical world, like the barricades, etc. But it felt a little long.
Interesting. That means it was boring because they were all almost exactly 15 seconds. What does this mean for a future where I, as an English major, wrote this script, and I think the AI scripts were better than what I wrote.
I think that, our initial reaction to AI is one of, wow, this is so good. Is it better than what I'm doing? But the personal experiences and kind of personal emotion and personal goals that we have when we speak bring a lot of value to what is being said. And that is more important. And I feel that AI has put actually more focus on what is human and what is important to us. And so I think over time, we're going to value humanity more and more.
This Odyssey Conversation Artificial Revolution is a production of KCBS All News Radio in San Francisco, produced by Michelle Fredrigal and Dennis Foley. Be sure to download the free Odyssey app for more shows like this, your favorite radio stations, and so much more. For Odyssey and KCBS, I'm Matt Bigler.
And our next guest is Mansfield Dr. Tanja Gimbel. She is about the computer science education projects presented as a sport. The nonprofit STEM It Up Sports is reaching kids and adults with innovative collaborations never dreamed of before. I mean, never dreamed of before. Dr. Gimbel, it is great to have you back again on the show. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Wonderful. First of all, let me just pull the curtain back. You're not even in Mansfield. You're not even in North Texas. You're not even in the United States. You're joining us via Zoom in Australia. Where in Australia are you?
So we're in Maryburg, Australia, which is a little bit outside of Melbourne. And so we're here with Energy Breakthrough, and we're providing assistance with their robotic competition that we host worldwide.
That is fantastic. Again, I'm so blown away with STEM It Up Sports and the fact that you're able to reach kids, also seniors, in I guess competitive ways of learning about robotics and learning about STEM and the whole nine yards. Can you talk about again all the things you've done with robotics? Because I think it's so fascinating. I mean, again, our previous Odyssey show, the Odyssey Conversation, was about AI, artificial intelligence. Mm-hmm. So you're all about all of this stuff.
Yes, you're right, Chris. We kind of do a little bit of everything. One of the things that we are trying to help people understand is that AI should not be feared.
Right.
There is some really great things and ways to use it if applied properly. It's like any other type of program or thing that we introduce to society. There comes these rules, there comes these regulations that go with it, and as long as we kind of maintain that digital citizenship, then we have a better chance at ensuring that the things that we invent are not abused. Mm-hmm. And so AI is just one of those tools that's just evolving every day. And I fear a lot of times, because we fear the unknown, we just don't jump in it so that we can understand how to better use it and make our lives a little bit better.
You know, you mentioned the word fear, and a lot of people just fear change in general. And it's happening so rapidly with technology. In fact, I always, when I speak into different groups, I always talk to older people in the group. I'll say, you know what? Your children and grandchildren are your tech support. And then I always say this, but guess what you have over them? They can't write in cursive yet. So they won't be afraid. It's like, okay, you're not being left out, but you shouldn't be afraid of technology. And I love the way you approach this. When you're approaching this with seniors, how does it differ of how you approach this with kids? Because kids generally are more excited to learn things.
Right. They're a little bit more daredevils in things. So they don't have, remember when you were young, you didn't have a lot of fears, right?
Right.
And so you just kind of went through things and you did things and you tried it. And that's really great. That's kind of the mindset we want our kids to be in. It's called computational thinking. They want to think about certain things and they want to solve these problems. And so, I really encourage people to allow their kids to make these types of, decisions and make it with them. So that way, you know what they're engaging in. So AI is, again, something that shouldn't be feared, but embraced and taught in a way that just helps kids understand how they can use it in their lives.
let's talk some more about why you're in Australia. You're talking about the robotics and the different competitions. Is this part of the Sphero Global competition? And can you tell us more about that? Because I find that exciting.
Yes. Yeah, so we, Sphero, we have an actual great partnership with Sphero. They make the robots that we use. And, you know, back when I started STEM It Up Sports, I took their competition and made it an in-person competition because they were currently only doing it virtual. Mm-hmm. This invited us to form a partnership, and now it's the Sphero Global Challenge presented by STEM It Up Sports. Because of that, we're worldwide doing these competitions in person more than we are doing them virtually. So this is one of the reasons I'm here in Australia, is to offer a plug-and-play opportunity to some of the host representatives that want to do this competition in person. I'm guiding them on how they would do it. So that's been the most exciting part of our trip here, is ensuring that we have a really great opportunity to learn about what they do and how we can bridge what we do together. So it's been fun so far.
In this global challenge, I understand the world championship will be in the spring of 2025. Where is it going to be located, or is this going to be all virtual?
So the Worlds is all virtual. We do have ambitions one day to have a Worlds in person. But, you know, trying to pull something off like that, you know, we have teams from all over the world, Singapore, Vietnam, Hong Kong, they're all over the place. And so to navigate getting those teams to a world competition can be challenging, right? Mm-hmm. So right now we're focused more on, you know, just maintaining the virtual level. And once we get, you know, funding or get more of a sponsor, we can probably offer an in-person Worlds competition.
I have to say that I am so excited that you're joining us from Australia. Again, we're talking with Dr. Tanja Grimble and Mansfield, who, you know, STEM It Up Sports, Mansfield. This is just amazing. I'm enjoying this because I was actually down in Australia covering the Summer Olympics in 2000. But I was in Sydney. And I've always told people, I said, if I disappear, look, in Australia, that's where I've gone. I've snuck away to Australia because I really, really enjoyed it. And I thought it was just a wonderful country. Have you had a chance to get around a little bit yet? Because I know you probably just got there a couple of days ago.
Yes. So actually, part of my tour down here is visiting tech schools and educational administrators to learn more about how they're implementing STEM in their program. Mm-hmm. And so it allows me to talk more about what we do and then how we can collaborate. Some of the collaboration that we're offering our educators on how to use AI and do professional development training on that. And I have an actual partner that provides that. Other ways we're doing is providing them certifications that we offer through Google. And then opportunities for them to collaborate with our students, right? Because we want them to kind of have that connection with other students across the country. Mm-hmm. So I've been visiting and taking a little tour each day of these tech schools or, you know, and they have a lot of STEM embedded into their program. It's an actually really great instructional learning process where they have a fluid classroom set up. And so it just really allows kids to have a bigger creativity stream and what they want to do. And I've been enjoying every minute of that.
Tell us how it compares to what you got going on in North Texas. And is it better? Are they ahead of you? Are you guys ahead of them? You know, we're competitive.
Yeah. Yes. I can say a couple of things that has impressed me so far is how they administer their classroom instruction. Mm-hmm. This open setting is starting to happen a lot in Texas. There's certain schools in Mansfield that have an open setting kind of instruction where classrooms are allowed to freely roam between classes and share and collaborate ideas, right? Mm-hmm. Well, here in Australia, that's all they do. That's part of their fabric. They include not only just their students I went to a school that had students from ages preschool all the way up to high school, right? And we used to have schools like that in Texas. In some cases, we do in little areas. But this is, they had so many students that I was thinking like, wow, this is a huge campus for this many kids. And the way they interacted, the way they engaged, they were freely able to go in and out of their classrooms, collaborate with each other. They had their own schedules. There was not many teachers that were out monitoring them. They just had a lot of autonomy to be able to go and do, and they felt trusted. And so we just thought it was just amazing to see these kids engage in that way. And I would love to see a lot of our schools kind of implement that freedom of education because it just allows students to develop more of a sense of how they want to be taught certain things, or how the learning process and how fast they learn things. So it's been really an eye-awakening experience.
I love the way you talk about all of the things going on with stem cells, and not just stem cells, but STEM research. We're talking about robotics, all these different things, the math, the everything about it. And I love the fact that you came up with STEM It Up Sports, which is an innovative collaborative of science, technology, engineering, and mathematics performed as a sport to excite the first timers. We're talking about kids or even adults and experienced individuals passionate about the world of computer science. So when you came up with this technique, let's talk about this again, because you talked about it a couple of years ago when we had you on. When you came up with this whole idea, it's like, okay, kids like to compete, and extracurricular activities a lot of times for schools are sports related. Can you talk about how you came up with the whole concept of, like I said, we're talking about science, technology, engineering, and math, STEM as a sport?
Yes. Yeah, so being in Texas, we're competitive with all types of sports, right? And so what I know to be certain is that parents will spend money for their kids to participate in the sport.
Yes, ma'am.
In hopes of getting a scholarship, in hopes of getting, you know, getting seen or recognized. I understand all of that, right? And we know that every kid that participates in the sport will not go to the NBA or the NFL or any of these other, you know, leagues, but you'll have that select few that will, okay? I felt like tech should be a sport, because there's so many things that we use tech for. We use it in sports. We use it as a sport, as a science, right? And how sports is operated. There is no football game that you're not using math and you're not using some type of science and physics to help you travel the ball down the field, stepping in the right direction to make sure you collect it. I mean, the same with baseball. Every sport has some type of STEM collaboration in it, whether it's the science, the math, there's some technology involved based on,
always,
you know, the bat that you use, always. And so why not make tech be its own sport, so that kids that are not sports heavy have another area that they can go in and compete, so that they can feel like their geniuses matter as well.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that's really what I'm trying to, that's really why I came up with that name, because people would gravitate to it as a sport.
Exactly. I think that's brilliant. And I said that to you in the past. I think it's very, very brilliant. And you've got kids who are actually working with robots. Can you talk about what that's like for those parents who can't even envision that, or grandparents who can't even envision that?
Yeah. So one of the things that I love about the stuff that we do is that computer science programming is in everything. So robotics just requires that. It has some engineering part to it as well. So you have to think on the fly, and you have to problem solve all the time. If one thing is off, that requires you to figure out how you need to fix it. And that's with everything that we do, right? So I often give the example that when they came up with the sink that you put your hand in and you wash your hands and it reads, you know, your hand.
Right.
They didn't take into consideration that hands have different color skin tones, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so when someone of a different skin tone, a darker skin tone, would put their hands in there, it wouldn't come on. And that was because as engineers, we didn't have enough diversity to understand the problems that needed to be solved when we were trying to invent certain things. And when we're kids, we want to have this big diversity of ways that we can, you know, problem solve and help kids, you know, conquer different issues. We got to stop asking kids, what do you want to be when you grow up, and start asking them what problems you want to solve. Okay, because that's the better question than what do you want to be when you grow up?
You know what? I always wonder why sometimes when I'm trying to wash my hands in the sink, where, you know, the men's room, wherever I am, and you put your hands, like you said, under the faucet and it doesn't come on, like it's hesitating. I'm like, why is it hesitating? I didn't know that that was probably part of the aspect, the different melatonin or skin tones.
Right. There's a, you know, if we don't have enough people in the field of education and in technology, we won't see these problems happen or be able to fix them, or we'll fix them in a delay. I mean, I remember walking into a store and almost ran into the door because it didn't scan me to open up the door. Yeah. And I had to actually put my hand out as my palm of my hand, because if you notice, most people's palm of their hand is around the same skin tone. Mm-hmm. So I had to actually put that out so that it would open up. And I said, wow, there's a flaw in that. And they haven't figured it out yet. You know, like there's something they need to fix. And then the next time I went to that store, that was fixed.
You know, what's wild, technology is moving so fast right now with the NFL. You have a media credential, but prior to getting your media credential, you had to take a photograph. And now to enter various press boxes around the NFL, you have to have a facial recognition. And that's basically common. And you've been used to these kind of technologies for years and years and years. I wanted to know how you think the pace of technology and the fact that it's happening so fast, is it happening too fast? Is it not fast enough? Are there some things we need to know about, like, you know, driverless cars and stuff like that?
Well, I mean, you're right. I have to say that there's so much changes that are happening. Some are kind of like experimental, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've ever heard of Suno.com. It's an actual app that's an AI app. And it actually, it was actually founded and created by Will.i.am and couple of his partners, right?
Yeah.
And one thing
from the Black Eyed Peas.
Yeah, from the Black Eyed Peas. He's a very good, you know, STEM advocate for a lot of things. And one of the things I loved about this app was that you can take music and put your own words into the song, and it will actually create an actual song for you.
Wow.
It'll give you, you can put the type of beat you want, you know, everything. And it'll actually scrub songs to ensure that there's not a copyright issue with your song. And then you can publish it right there on the spot.
That's amazing.
Now, it's absolutely amazing. And it's free. You know, like you can go online and you can
make as many songs. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so here was the one thing that I loved about this. They're trying to, and I think this is more of experimental than anything, but they want to put this they're putting this gadget in cars, right? So that as you drive, you can have an extended version of your music while you're driving. So if you turn to the right, it has an extended version. If you go over a bump, it has an extended version. Like it adds to the song that you're creating while you're driving. And one of the things I said was like, why would I need this? You know, like in my mind, I'm thinking in my car, why would I need this? And I answered that question very quickly. I don't need it. But the millennials of the world,
yeah,
the younger
the
generation.
Gen Zs, yeah.
Yes. They would love this because this is, you know, if they travel a lot or if they drive in different places, this is something that they can do while they're driving, is create music. You know, and so I feel like they're trying to meet them where they are, and, you know, and experimenting with things that just kind of gets their attention, so that, you know, if I'm an artist that will never get seen by a record label, I can go to this platform and create something and maybe get seen a different way. And so to me, that's just meeting them in their own space.
I think you're right.
I love those opportunities.
I think you're right. Yeah. And again, it's just like you said, it's like even STEM it up sports. It's like it's meeting them where they are or where they want to go, as opposed to the cookie cutter. Well, your grandfather was a scientist and we went to the lab and those kind of things. And that also kind of leads me into your partnership with the Arlington Mansfield YMCA STEM Center or STEAM Center. Can you talk about that relationship? Because I think it's fantastic, again, helping out kids where they are.
Yes. So I'm very excited about this partnership. We've now been together for 2 years now. Mm-hmm. And so we put an actual center in place there. And so as a form of collaboration, they offer our classes to their members to participate in, their kids, right? And so we do robotics, we have esports. In esports, we teach video game design. We teach, AI classes. We also teach broadcasting. Like, there's a lot of things mm-hmm. that we teach because we want them to have that exposure. Our robotics classes that we offer, we probably offer maybe two a day from Monday through Thursday, and all of them are full. Every one of them get full before, a week out when we open up the registration, which is a good problem to have. But mm-hmm. obviously it's a problem because a lot of kids and parents want to be a part of the program. And I just hate to have waiting lists. Okay, I really do. I hate to have waiting lists. But what we're trying to tap into is the homeschool area, so that during the day, those homeschoolers can come and enjoy robotics and STEM rather than having to do it in the afternoon when it's so packed. And so we're offering that, and also a field trip opportunity for schools locally to just come and do both esports and robotics. And so that partnership allows us the space to do that in, because it's just a real good central location. But it's also the partnership that we have with them just to offer to all of their members. It's truly a really good harmony. So I really enjoy it.
Oh, yes. It's fantastic. Again, if you're just joining us, we're talking with Dr. Tanja Grimble. She is the founder of the nonprofit Steam It Up Sports. And again, your collaborations with robotics and technology and AI is just absolutely amazing. You're joining us from Australia as we speak, but of course, you're based in the Mansfield area, and we love that. In fact, there's so many things going on with the Arlington-Mansfield area, especially in Arlington with the Texas Live, and you got the Cowboys and the Texas Rangers out there with sports. But more importantly, there's so many opportunities, especially with the World Cup coming to town. And I was wondering, with your STEM workforce readiness, are there opportunities for professional careers that you guys can help kids with?
Yes, actually. So our partnership with Google allows us to provide scholarships to nice. Students that are interested in getting a certification in like cybersecurity, IT, data analytics, business intelligence, social media, Python. There's tons of them that they can actually take. And what's great about this is that if you're 13 and older, you can get up to 16 hours of college credit if you take one of these courses, and you can take them online. You can take them at your own pace. And when you're done, you have this certification that you can use. I recognize that not every student may want to go to college, but mm-hmm. this is an opportunity for them to get something a little bit more and then explore that option if they want to later on. There's so many companies that are taking applicants that have these certifications. And so why not take advantage of them, right? Why not at least do it? And it's not just for kids. Adults can do it too. So, we offer that in a college readiness. We partner with the city of Mansfield to offer that as a college readiness and also a unemployment kind of a thing. And so we have many judges and, councilmen that refer us to their clients or refer us to anyone that's in the court system that need a second chance at things. They mm-hmm. refer them to us, and we give them access to these classes.
I love all that. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's really exciting to see a lot of our participants. I mean, we have participants in this program from all over the world that are taking advantage of this certification process. So I'm excited to have that partnership with Google and be able to offer offer it free to our community.
That is absolutely fantastic. And you mentioned the partnership with Google, and you mentioned a couple of other little, like we mentioned the YMCA and Arlington Mansfield. There's some other partnerships that you have that are actually right there for people in the, I guess it's the STEM ecosystem, where people can connect. Yeah. And you're almost like a, if they reach out and go to your website, it's like, guess what? There might be an opportunity that fits what you're into, and you don't have to be a kid.
Yes. We actually built some new partnerships. Prison Ministry, they're called Angel Tree Foundation.
Yes, I'm familiar with them.
Yeah, exactly. So we have partnered with them, and we provide their STEM experiences and now travel with them to 5 different cities to put on STEM activities for the kids that they have in their program. And if you're not familiar with this, they have students, they have programs for youth that have a parent or parents that may be incarcerated.
Mm-hmm.
And so this gives us an opportunity to provide them STEM engagement. And then their parents are supported by other engagements that they do. And so we have designed their STEM days, implemented those. And this next year we'll be visiting, 5 different cities. Dallas and Houston are one of them, or 2 of the cities, and providing these activities to kids so that they can be exposed to, computer science. And so it's just been really fun. We just came back from Baltimore at the beginning of this month and hosted an event there. And so, yeah, we've been traveling a lot, just trying to make sure that we get more exposure. But yeah, it's been really fun doing that. Another one of our partnerships that I'm happy to get underway is we may have a possible partnership at hosting the Dallas Mavs gym STEM event. Yes.
So that'd be great.
We've been having some talks over that. I know it's scheduled in April to host that. And mm-hmm. so we want to host, at least the 400 plus girls that would come that day for STEM engagement. So we're really excited about that opportunity as well.
Speaking of opportunities, and we started the show talking about this, that sometimes there are people who have a fear of technology. It might be moving too fast, or the language is over their head, or they're just not comfortable with it yet. And I say this, and you tell me if this is a good comparison or a good way to approach it. You tell me and you fill in the rest of the blanks. I always say to people, if you go online and you shop on Amazon and you're able to, peruse the stuff and see what different things you might want, and all of a sudden you get a comfort level there because you could actually take your time on your own time and see what you like. Is that a way that people can understand and step into STEM and, in your website in particular, where you can kind of see what might be out there and see the opportunities at your own pace? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does actually, because we're trying to tap into so many different areas for different people. We have an area, we're really a company for all ages, right? Because mm-hmm. our oldest participant is 101. So, basically, what we're trying to do is we're trying to expose all levels of STEM to different people. And so when you come to our website, there's a shopping that you can do. This next year, we're going to be offering AI classes for entrepreneurs because as a CEO and of a small business, I've come around and networked with other CEOs with small businesses, and there's all these things that they wish they had, right?
Mm-hmm.
They wish they had another employee. And you'd be surprised that you can actually build an AI assistant that just allows you to, do some work for you so that you wouldn't have to do it.
Are you saying your own robot? You can build your own robot?
Yeah, it's a virtual a virtual assistant. You know,
wow,
what I mean?
And they can do your own Siri.
Exactly. But that's the whole purpose of of AI is to make your job easier by removing the minutiae that you have to go through on a regular basis, and allowing you to create, develop, and explore and build your business. And so we want to kind of tap into that area. And then I have a partner that does education and tapping into the educators on how to use AI to improve in their classroom development or delivery, right? So she teaches them about tools that they can use for their classroom and help their kids learn certain things, all while staying in the state standards that are out there. And so these types of things we're trying to offer to the community. So then that way they have a better opportunity of understanding all the ways that I can engage in STEM. And so I'm just excited to deliver these different nuggets across the board to the individuals that want it, right?
Mm-hmm.
you may just still be scared of AI, and that's okay, because you think it may take over your job. And the truth is that AI is not going to take over your jobs. But the person that knows how to use it may take over your job.
Exactly. So you got to get up to speed with that person. And
That's right.
I just love this entire conversation. You know, we are going to talk again, especially get closer to the spring, because what's the big spring event?
STEMcon 2025.
Dun, dun, dun. We're going to be talking about that coming up. And what's the website right now? I always tell people you can Google up Stem It Up Sports. You can Google that and it'll take you to the website. But what's the website again?
So it's stemitupsports.com,
mm-hmm.
and you can do a backslash and do STEMcon. But when you go onto the website, you can click and you can see all the different tabs that they'll take you to all of our academy, all of our programs. And you can even do an inquiry if you want to learn more about our program or want us to come and be a program in your school district or your church. We can definitely take those interests.
Dr. Tanja Grimble, it's been exciting to have you back on again, especially from Australia. So I want to thank you for joining us.
Yes, thank you for having me again. I really appreciate it.
Yes, and thank you all for joining us on Better Living, a show about people or organizations having a big impact here in North Texas. I'm your host, Chris Arnold. So long, everybody.